our podcast.
And we're back. You're listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Joining me in the studio today is our occasional contributor, Stephen Fan.
And opera correspondent.
And opera correspondent. And generally arts correspondent.
Yes.
And sometimes political and financial commentator.
And cultural maven. Clearly doing many, many jobs. But there's something...
A renaissance man.
Oh, one would hope. But there's something that came up on the weekend. It was on social media. It was on X or Twitter or whatever it's called.
Probably passed around through all the others as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like Blue Sky, you know, screenshots, whatever. And basically, it was this guy, Bill Ackman, who is a hedge fund billionaire based in New York. And he would, you know, he would make these occasional, very long-winded posts on X. He's bought a subscription, obviously. And they would be just like unintentionally hilarious. And he made the absolute, you know, banger of all time this weekend where, and I'll read you a sample of this, not that long. He says, and this is in his voice, "I hear from many young men that they find it difficult to meet young women in a public setting. In other words, the online culture has destroyed the ability to spontaneously meet strangers. As such, I thought I would share a few words that I used in my youth to meet someone that I found compelling. I would ask, 'May I meet you?' before engaging further in a conversation. I almost never got a no." So this like sparked off this absolute firestorm of like memes mocking this expression that people are actually now like using it sarcastically and ironically to actually meet people. So like someone posted a screenshot of them trying to like slide into Sydney Sweeney's DMs on Insta with "May I meet you?" People are approaching each other in coffee shops with "May I meet you?" And it's just like, it's become very hilarious. Bill Ackman is a very politically controversial person. He's said a lot of idiotic things, especially about Trump and so forth. But he's just so like blindingly like oblivious and self-unaware that sometimes the stuff he says transcends into the realm of the hilarious. And this is one such case. You know, "May I meet you?" Maybe I say it to someone, actually. It's just because the phrase is so funny, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, "May I meet you?" Like, it's also very direct. And I'm sure, like, I've actually said versions of this in the past. But I suppose, you know, any thoughts on this?
Well, I guess it's a funny thing, you know, because nowadays, you know, if you want to call someone, you text them first. "Hey, is it okay to call now?"
Yeah.
You know, and it's weird when we start putting, you know, these weird conditions on social interactions where before you can talk to someone, you need to get consent. And, you know, obviously there are situations where people,
but it's a catch 22, right? Like, how do you talk to someone without consent? But how do you get consent without talking to someone? And it's a little bit of a catch 22. And I think there's,
but I guess, you know, part of the question too is, do you need consent for every kind of?
But I think there's also
interaction,
absolutely.
Right?
And I think,
you know, it's like we're putting up, you know, we create a world in which we have do more and more of our social interactions through digital medium. So it's kind of indirect and it's not personal. And then we start putting up more barriers to, you know, to direct in-person social interactions. And obviously there are many different situations, you know. I mean, you know, if people are on the bus with their headphones on, I think they're already indicating they want to be left alone, you know. But then it's, you know, and, you know, she didn't be going at the people and, you know, at the grocery store or just where they're running around their business. But on the other hand, then you're at a social occasion, you know, where the whole idea is you talk to other people.
So I have two quick stories about this. I don't want to take up too much time. Yep. The first story was when I was at university, everyone quote unquote studied at a library. It really is an air quote because it turns out there's a loud section of the library and there's a quiet section of the library. The quiet section is where people actually studied, and the loud section is like where people hung out and socialized. It was just kind of like, really what you're doing is like you're taking your laptop and books out there. You're like, I'm available for socialization. There's something really interesting going on there, and it's not necessarily a bad thing at all, but like, because after all, you know, socializing in a library, no alcohol, no drugs, nothing, it's actually very healthy. But like, the second thing I would say is that I think interactions today just generally are plagued by so much anxiety, right? Like, there's so much irony that permeates our social lives, our cultural lives. There's so much self-consciousness. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we need a little less self-consciousness and just more forthrightness.
And an ability to read the room.
Absolutely, and the ability to read the room, like the loud and quiet section of a library.
All right. Here we have a long report from our reporter, Danny Nisvadarani, about Vision Zero, an effort to make transit deaths, or road deaths, and take them down to zero. So let's go with that.
Reporting from New Westminster, BC, this is Danny Nisvadarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. The City of New Westminster is aiming to fully eliminate all traffic-related deaths and injuries, and they plan to achieve this through the recently launched Vision Zero Task Force. According to the city's press release regarding the task force, quote, "The goal is to design a transportation network that anticipates human error and prevents it from leading to tragedy," end quote. Vision Zero is still in its preliminary stages, so CJSF reached out to the City of New Westminster to learn more about what the task force entails and what it plans to deliver. We sat down for a conversation with New Westminster Mayor Patrick Johnstone, who is helping lead the Vision Zero task force. During our conversation, we spoke about other cities that have adopted a Vision Zero philosophy, some of the city departments involved, and what the task force aims to accomplish. Please take a listen.
Okay, well, New Westminster has made a commitment to making our roads safer, and making roads safer especially for vulnerable road users. And we've been doing a lot of work over the last couple of years on mostly engineering investments in order to build safer intersections and to address some safety issues we identified in our road network. But Vision Zero is a different approach, which is popular in North America as a marketing term, but popular in Europe as an actual change in mindset about how we actually manage road safety. And I want New Westminster to take that second sort of more European approach and talk about road safety as a systems failure or a systems problem, as opposed to just a marketing program around different engineering or different enforcement opportunities. So my inspiration came from, of all places, Hoboken, New Jersey, which is a city remarkably similar to New Westminster, an older, dense city next to a much larger city, post-industrial on the river. But they really embraced, more than I think any city in North America, a Vision Zero mindset, and have had no road deaths in many years, in over 7 years now, in the city of Hoboken. And I met the mayor of Hoboken, New Jersey, and I asked him, you know, how did that happen? And he said, simple, we just fixed the roads. And I said, well, it's not that simple. So so in British Columbia, we have a different jurisdiction here. We have jurisdictional overlap. We have the Ministry of Transportation, we have TransLink, we have ICBC. We have different agencies that have control over our roads. And I thought the first step in a Vision Zero approach is to actually understand the data, actually understand who is collecting what data around road safety, who is doing what work over roads around road safety. And so the first step in our Vision Zero journey in New Westminster is to bring those partners together on a task force. And we had our first meeting last week, and we sat down and talked about, now, who does what when a road incident happens? Whose role is where? Who is collecting what data? And who is able to share that data with everyone else around this table so that we can work together on creating a creative or an innovative approach to addressing road safety locations in the city after incidents happen? Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, yeah, that relates to another question I had, which was I noticed in like the sort of press information regarding the Vision Zero Task Force, there was talk about wanting to adopt a Vision Zero philosophy that has been adopted in other cities and has been proven successful. And you mentioned New Jersey, specifically that Hoboken, New Jersey.
Yes, the home of Frank Sinatra, but that's another.
Oh, okay. adopting a similar philosophy. And, you know, I think a lot of times when people think of road or vehicle accidents or road or vehicle deaths, it is upsetting to say, but it almost feels like an inevitability in a lot of people's minds. How, I guess, do you want the Vision Zero Task Force to sort of combat that narrative of just the roads being the way they are?
Right. As a philosophy at the center, Vision Zero is overturns that idea, overturns the idea that deaths and serious injuries related to road use are inevitable and something we have to accept as part of the economy of moving around. We have to change that mindset. We have to change the culture to say that that's acceptable. We have to start by accepting the idea that that deaths and serious injuries are not a necessary part of transportation. And there are cities around the world that have demonstrated that. I mentioned Hoboken. Helsinki is another city that has embraced this, and they simply did not have a road death in Helsinki last year. That's a city of over 1 million people in the metro area, and they did not have a road death last year. Like, it is, it's doable, but we do have to change the philosophy. And it goes all the way down to even talking about the language. We don't use the word accident when we talk about road incidents. There are no accidents when it comes to the road. They are preventable and identifiable causes to road deaths and to serious injury. And just using the word accident, it gives the idea that it's inevitable, it's unavoidable, it's something that no one could have foreseen coming, when actually there are processes to identify incidents that are likely to cause death and injury, and we can address those issues. And I think we can relate it to a couple of different things. We can relate it to aircraft safety. When an airplane crashes, things happen. Right? When people die in an aircraft crash, whether it's a small aircraft or a large aircraft, there are people who find out what caused that incident. And even if it's pilot error, even if it's mechanical error, even if it's weather, there are recommendations that come forward to how are we going to stop that happening again in the future. We don't accept that people have to die for there to be planes flying around the world. Another example is workplace safety. 100 years ago, when people were dying or being seriously injured on the job, it was a presumption that it was just careless workers and there's nothing we can do about that. That's the cost of coal mining, or that's the cost of running a manufacturing plant, or that's the cost of a retail store. We don't accept that anymore. Through WorkSafe and through workplace safety, we have identified measures in place, and we put measures in place so that people are safe on the job. And it comes down to what we like to call an accident is almost always someone made a mistake in an unsafe environment. And people make mistakes all the time. People make mistakes when flying their airplane. People make mistakes at work. People make mistakes when they're driving their car. But what we have to do is remove the part of where that just making a mistake results in a serious injury or a death. We've done that in the workplace. We do that with everything from steel-toe boots to safe approach distances to creating, we've done a lot of work to make workplaces safe and recognize when someone is killed in a workplace incident that there were decisions that were made around putting them in that unsafe place. We don't do that so much on the roads. You know, we're very reactive in the roads on roads, and we accept the fact that people make mistakes when they're driving, and sometimes people die because of that. Well, yes, people make mistakes when driving. Let's not accept that people die because of that. Let's build safer roads. Let's build safer vehicles. Let's build safer practices so that serious injury and death is not an accepted part of our roads.
Who are some of the people involved within the task force? I noticed in the press video there were, you know, city staff, but then also people from Vision Zero Vancouver, as well as Movement, in that video. And I'm wondering how the layout of the task force was formulated.
So those are those advocates from the community are not part of the task force in our first phase, but they did come and like we have talked to those advocates about Vision Zero, and recognize there will be a second phase of this work in the city where we do bring the activists and the community in to talk about what they see and what they experience and what the city should be doing differently. But this first phase is actually really a bit of a technical work. It's a little bit boring technical work. But we have the city's engineering teams. We have first responders, fire and police, who respond to incidents that happen on the road. We have the Ministry of Transportation's road safety group in there. And we have public health. We have people from injury prevention in work in public health. And it's interesting, they all have a different take into how they interact with road safety. The public health has a mandate to reduce accidents and reduce deaths and serious injuries from accidents. And driving is only one part of that. But they identify accident trends, injury trends, death trends. But they don't necessarily share that information proactively with the communities where those incidents are taking place. And so we can't, as a city, necessarily react to trends that are coming out of that because we're not given that data. Ministry of Transportation, much the same things. They address road safety on the roads that they have a mandate over. But they don't necessarily share those with the city. The one piece missing, we've invited them to take part in this, and I'm still hoping they will take an active part of this, is ICBC. ICBC collects the most road safety data of anyone in the province. But the road safety data they collect isn't necessarily designed to address road design or think causative factors around road design. It's more around collecting data to determine fault, to determine what happened so that we can understand whether there was any criminal activity that took place that resulting in an incident. Drinking and driving being an obvious example. They want to collect data. If the person was drinking and driving before they had the incident, that's a criminal act that led to it. But they don't necessarily give us the information we need right now or collect the information we need right now to understand trends around unsafe areas in the city, what the causative factors around road angles and lighting patterns and those types of things were. And more importantly, ICBC isn't really fast at turning the data back over to us. We do use ICBC crash data to prioritize road improvements in New Westminster, but it's almost always, you know, 2 or 3 years old crash data, and it doesn't necessarily break down that data in between the different road users so that in a way that we can actually proactively design around that. So I think they need to come to the table. And all that to say, to answer your question, at the first phase, it's a very technical task force talking about the data that we collect and how people interact with road incidents, with the goal that they will create some recommendations about first steps that the city can do around better data sharing and also about advocacy to the provincial government around regulatory changes or legislative changes or things that the provincial government can do to help us as a partner in making roads safer. I think after this first phase does those first recommendations, that's when we'll bring in a broader representation of the community. Because I don't want to talk about an intersection. I don't want to talk about, I can look out my window right now and see 6th and Royal and think about things that can make that intersection safer. Our staff are constantly doing that type of engineering work. I think the Vision Zero approach is something different. It's looking at the bigger systems. And when we have a better understanding of how we can adjust those systems and what priorities we take to changing those systems, that will trickle down to better advice about what we can do about 6th and Royal, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that ties into the next question I had, which was just, say, 2-3 years from now, when the Vision Zero Task Force has kind of established all of what it's wanted to achieve, what are some of those key deliverables? Like, how do you see the just road infrastructure of New West shifting to not accommodate, but to represent what Vision Zero is about?
Yeah, I think that we will see our prioritization of our investment in road safety shifting and being more data-driven and being more informed by what the actual unsafe situations are out there instead of being reactive to 3-year-old crash data when it comes to prioritizing that work, or being reactive to a person who comes to council and says this intersection in front of my house isn't safe. We have to hear those voices. We have to hear from those folks. But that's not necessarily like before I spend $1 million putting a signal light treatment into an intersection, I don't want just one person in the community to say that intersection is not safe. I want to actually understand that that investment isn't being better spent $1 million somewhere else, making an intersection that's actually less safe better. The other side of that is really, I think, some of that legislation and regulatory change we need. I think that it's difficult in British Columbia for governments to share data. It's just a matter of sort of how the bureaucracy of our different levels of government work. And I think that if we could have some legislative or regulatory change to make it easier for us to share that data in a creative way and in a proactive way. And so that, you know, I sat down last week or a week and a half ago with a person in this community who had been struck by a vehicle while they were riding their bicycle and had life-altering injuries. And they felt that the road wasn't safe, that they were not served by the cycle routes that were provided by them to them in the city. And they felt that put them a little bit in danger. They also felt that the police didn't react quickly enough to address the hit and run or to find the person who did the hit and run who injured them. They also feel they've been let down by ICBC because they're stuck in a no-fault insurance situation which treats them as a liability, not as a person who needs support. So there's a lot of systems around this that I think are failing this person. But one piece of that is that my engineering staff in the city didn't know that crash had happened. They did not know this person had been hit by a car on that intersection, had been hit and run. There is no process to get that data back to our engineering staff so they can go out to that site and look at it and say, oh, can we make engineering changes here to make this intersection safer? It's very ad hoc how our engineering department finds out about incidents that happen in the city. So we can't even make those, we can't be proactive as we'd like to be in addressing engineering changes without that information.
Mm-hmm. Is the Vision Zero Task Force something that all of New West Council has some sort of involvement with, or just certain members?
Yeah, right now in the task force, I'm the chair of the task force, and Councillor Fontaine, one of the other members of council, is on there as a council representative.
Okay.
But again, it's mostly a technical body at this point. That'll be an interesting conversation. I think all of council endorsed the idea of doing this path, Vision Zero and us going down this pathway towards creating a technical task force and then expanding it in a second phase to include a bigger community conversation. So I think everybody on council is concerned about road safety and is concerned about making especially vulnerable road users safe in the community.
Mm-hmm. Another question, I feel like this is something that I often ask when it comes to just any interview I do regarding transportation and how to improve safety or even increases in public transit in certain cases. I think there is sort of a sentiment among some people who primarily drive that any sort of change to road infrastructure in a way that prioritizes pedestrians or public transit is a detriment to them. And what would you say to those people?
Yeah, a common refrain in my work is that the only thing worse than the way things are is any kind of change. And that is doubly so when it comes to transportation. I guess I have to say it's not a zero-sum game. We know that kind of improvements, that separation of modes, for example, building mobility routes and sidewalks and crosswalks, and we know that it doesn't just make the vulnerable road users, the pedestrians and the cyclists and the e-mobility users, it doesn't just make them safer, it also makes drivers safer. It also reduces automobile incidents.
It's hard to think about. I'll just say it's not a zero-sum game. It makes everybody safer. And one-third of people don't drive. Like, let's start with that, right? Like, one-third of people just are either too young or too old or too infirm or just choose not to drive an automobile on their daily use. And yet 90% of our road space is used to move cars around and store cars on. Like, that's an inequity right there. So the minor changes we make, if we take 10% of our road space and dedicate it to non-automobile storage or movement, it actually serves a much broader part of the community more than that 10% represents in the community. But the biggest message of it all is it makes everybody safer. And we are all at some point in our journey, pedestrians. Even if we drive most of the time, we still have to walk across the parking lot. We still sometimes walk across the street to our neighbors. You know, we are all pedestrians at one part in our in the phase of our journeys. And I just, again, we part of the Vision Zero thing is we have to think holistically and citywide. Everybody you talk to wants people to drive 30 kilometers an hour on the street in their neighborhood in front of their home. They want the road in front of their home to be safer. But they also want the other roads that they use every day to not be that slower road, that safer road. They want it to be a faster road. And we have to recognize that we have to act as a community, and we have to make decisions around safety for everyone. And that means changes sometimes. It means uncomfortable changes for some people. But the other side of it is we're not reinventing the wheel here in New Westminster. There are cities across North America. There are cities in British Columbia. There are cities around the world where these types of changes have taken place, and universally they are popular a year or two later. You know, change is difficult in the time, but a year or two later, universally, people like safer streets. They like to see safe pedestrian and cycling infrastructure. The time of change is a time of concern and worry and a lot of interesting debate, but I think that 2 years, we have to believe that New Westminster is like every other city in the world, that 2 years down the road, people feel safer and more comfortable and are happy that we made these investments.
The last question I had for you was, you know, have you been in communication with some of the other municipalities throughout the Lower Mainland, and do you foresee this Vision Zero Task Force maybe causing like a ripple effect within other local governments?
I hope so. I mean, I know that Vision Zero has been adopted by a couple of other cities in the Lower Mainland as I say it a little bit cynically, as a bit of a marketing exercise around the road safety work they're continuing to do. It hasn't necessarily been adopted as a mindset change or a culture change. And I think I would love if New Westminster was the beginning of a change in the culture discussion about road safety. I think that the recommendations that come out of this task force could include those legislative and regulatory changes and the changes in how the province and the cities interact around road safety that could ripple out and could actually have really positive effects around the region. I think there's some simple legislative changes that we've been asking for a while around 30 kilometer an hour streets, around safe road safety camera, around automated enforcement and things like that could, as if we raise our voices and we make change in New Westminster and demonstrate the value of road safety, that it could ripple around the region and across the province. I hope so. That's the bigger goal. But let's get New Westminster safe first.
All right. Is there anything else about the task force that you want to leave people with, that you want people to know?
No, just talk to your community. I mean, I guess that everybody, this is, honestly, it's a culture change. And it's a culture change in City Hall about how we see our transportation space. But it's also going to take a culture change out there in the community about road space. If you, everybody is angry about seeing unsafe driving around them. Everybody is, whether you're in a car, whether you're on a bicycle, whether you're walking. When you see someone blowing through a stop sign or speeding excessively or acting unsafe like that and putting the people around them in danger, people are vocal about that. They care about that. Let's talk about what that is. Because we can't just accept that unsafe driving is a normal part of our life, because people die from this. There are a lot of, you know, hundreds of people in British Columbia every year die in road violence. And we don't have to accept that. We can change that. And so when you hear people speaking out about a change in the road system, about a narrowing of a road in order to make cars go slower, about the reduction in speed limits, or about, you know, new cycling or pedestrian infrastructure that slows cars down, people are angry about that. They're concerned about that. They're unsure about that. We have to change the conversation and say that is there because it makes me safer in my community. And that's a longer journey. We have to change some hearts and minds about the value of safety over the value of convenience to drive fast.
Once again, that was our conversation with New Westminster Mayor Patrick Johnstone on the recently launched Vision Zero Task Force.
And thanks to Dan and Nez Vadarani for that interview with New West Mayor Patrick Johnstone, all made possible by the Local Journalism Initiative. Stay tuned here on CJSF. Democracy Now! Is coming up in about 10 seconds. Also later on today, there is Wandering Rhythms at noon, typically Tuesdays, up at 3 o'clock, and so much more here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Tune in tomorrow morning for Speak Up again, starting at 10 o'clock, and on...
Hi, I'm